I'm Vanessa Pritchard. Welcome to this podcast from Keep Believing Ministries. Today's message was given by Dr. Ray Pritchard. At Keep Believing Ministries, we want to encourage and equip people to keep believing in Jesus. You can find us online at www.keepbelieving.com. Stay tuned for this special podcast.
There are times when we need to see a familiar verse in a new way. Last night, we left off at the end of Romans chapter 12, verse 1. That's not the end of that paragraph. It's not the end of the passage. We know what Romans 12, 2 says. Be not conformed to this world. Do not be conformed to this world. That is simple. That is clear. That is concise. What exactly does Paul mean? What exactly is Paul talking about? What world is he talking about? And what does conforming to the world look like? And what does it mean not to be conformed to this world? I commented to you last night that one of the problems we have, certainly it's a problem for the preacher, when you come to a very familiar passage of Scripture, sometimes you can know it so much that it loses its power to startle you. Now I'm hoping that in these early days of this week, as we come back several times to this passage, that we will recover the startling truth behind Romans 12, 1 and 2, a passage that everybody agrees is absolutely foundational for an effective Christian life. So this morning, not even a whole verse, just a part of a verse. Do not be conformed to this world. A number of other translations bring out various shades of meaning. The New Life Version says, quote, do not act like the sinful people of the world. The New Century Version says, do not change yourselves to be like the people of this world. Some of you remember when the Amplified Version came out. Of course, Amplified is fun for Bible study because that's the version where they throw in every possible word in parentheses, and so short verses become long. And this is the Amplified Version of just that one phrase. Do not become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit in without even thinking. Do not be conformed to this world, this age, fashioned after and adapted to its external, superficial customs. Wow, I hope that makes it clear. The New Living Translation says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. Eugene Peterson gave it to us this way. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. That's actually helpful. That's more of a paraphrase, but it does capture what Paul is driving at. Be careful that in living in this world, that you so adapt the mindset of the world that you fit into it without even thinking about it. And finally, there is the justly famous rendering by J.B. Phillips. Quote, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold. Now, I think the general meaning of this phrase is perfectly clear. If you take all the different translations and paraphrases and put them all together, it really comes down to something like this. We are not like the people around us. We shouldn't try to act like we are. We aren't like them. We shouldn't try to act like we are like them. We must not try so hard to fit into the culture that we no longer think and act like Christians. J.B. Phillips does give us the very helpful reminder that the world around us is not, in the sense he means it here, the world around us is not merely neutral. The world around us, in the sense of Romans 12:2, is actually hostile to the things of God. So when we live in the world around us, it's not as if we are living in a morally neutral playground where we can be Christians and they can be non-Christians and everybody can go happily their own way. No, the world in the sense that Paul uses it is, in fact, doing everything it can to squeeze us into its mold. So the warning is, as a Christian, you are constantly, watch this, swimming upstream. You're swimming upstream against the current of the world, which is rushing towards you. Don't be surprised, and don't give in, and don't get swept away. So that's the basic meaning of the phrase. I think maybe our basic danger, our greatest danger, is to look at this command, which I will tell you, no matter how you translate it, this phrase is entirely negative. Our temptation is to look at this, don't be conformed to the world, and to draw wrong inferences from it. I can think of two wrong inferences we might come to. Number one, we might end up thinking that Paul means to warn us only against the external marks of worldly living. Now, in another generation I myself can remember, in another generation, preachers would come to this passage and they would tend to apply this verse to the big four sins: drinking, smoking, dancing, card play. Or might have been applied to women wearing lipstick, or men with long hair, women with short skirts, or listening to certain kinds of music, going to the movie theater. Sometimes those lists of rules, don't do this and don't do that, became so long that a Christian was defined by what you didn't do. Now, pay attention to what I'm about to say. I know that we think we are far enlightened over our ancestors. And I know especially, perhaps it is not so totally true of Word of Life Monday morning, but I know the younger you go down the age scale, the easier it is to caricature that kind of preaching from yesteryear. But it would be quite unfair. While we all agree this morning, Christianity cannot be reduced to a set of rules, in most cases, note I said most cases, those warnings had some basis in fact. Most of us, I suppose, don't hear that sort of preaching these days. And on balance, all things weighed, I suppose that's a good thing. But I want you to know, I am not sure that dropping the rules we used to follow has actually produced a new wave of holiness. It's okay with me if we want to rephrase the rules, but I think we should only do that if it's actually going to produce a new wave of holiness, which is actually what we all agree about. So, number one, we might, by looking at this, tend to pigeonhole it into a certain set of behavioral rules. And I don't think that's not the full extent of what Paul is trying to talk about here. Number two, when Paul says don't be conformed to the world, we might think that Christians therefore should withdraw from the world around us and should have nothing to do with it at all. You know, there are monasteries where people go. There are places out in the desert, particularly in the early church, the desert fathers, who would go out into the caves and withdraw from the city. And there in the cave, they would read and pray, and they would commune with God, and they would get their insights. And there's a whole group of early church leaders called the Desert Fathers, and some of their writings are actually quite interesting. And in our day, there are people who pull aside, who go to cabins and go to retreats, and there they stay. So they'll have no concourse and no interaction with the, quote, world around them. Is that what we find in the New Testament? Well, no. Read the book of Acts. I just got through going through the book of Acts myself in my devotional reading, my quiet time. Just finished it a few days ago. And you know what struck me? Paul was a big city man. Paul was not a cave dweller. Paul was not a guy who holed up out in the desert. Paul, now, he did go to the desert shortly after his conversion for a while, but in his ministry, where did he go? Big cities. Jerusalem, Antioch, Corinth, Athens, Rome. Paul was a big city man. He wasn't afraid. Wasn't afraid of the pagan city of Rome. He wasn't afraid to go and preach the gospel in the Areopagus, in the intellectual, moral, and cultural center of the ancient world, the great city of Athens. So, look. Who wrote these words? Do not be conformed to this world. The big city man, the Apostle Paul, the man who was thoroughly enmeshed in the culture of his day and was not afraid to take the gospel into the intellectual centers of his day. So, whatever else you want to say about Romans 12:2, it cannot be a call for all of us to withdraw from the intellectual and the moral and the spiritual centers of idolatry and unbelief in our day, because Paul's actions in the book of Acts show us he was not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. He would go preach it anywhere. So whatever else this means, it cannot mean that we are to run and hide. Everywhere I go, I hear Christians bemoaning what has happened in America. I hear it everywhere. Everywhere I go. I do a lot of Christian radio, American Family Radio. We talk about it every day. We're on top of that situation. We got it covered 7 ways from Sunday. You know, this world is a mess, right? This world is messed up. Our country is messed up. We've got problems everywhere, not least of which at the very top of our government. I mean, we have moral and spiritual confusion everywhere we go. Do you think it's any worse here than it was in Athens in the first century? Think it's any worse here than it was in Rome in the first century? Think it's any worse here than it was in Corinth, one of the most corrupt cities of the ancient world? You think it's any worse for us today than it was then? I understand we all see what's happening in America. It's still true, isn't it? The darker the night, the brighter the light. As our nation and our culture continues on its headlong rush into apparent self-destruction, these days ought to be the greatest days we've ever seen for the proclamation of the gospel. Because if we can ever say it clearly in this generation, at least one thing will be true. They'll know we aren't like them. They'll know we live by something different. We follow something different. We stand for something different. And in a world that seems to be rushing headlong over the cliff toward self-destruction, we have a wonderful opportunity to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. So, in the spirit of the man who said, I am not ashamed of the gospel, let us be clear then. When he said, do not be conformed to the world, he did not mean we are to retreat from the world so as never to interact with it at all. So what then is Paul warning us against? Well, I think the key word, obviously, is the word world. Do not be conformed to the world. Well, in the Greek language, there are two different words for world. One is the word cosmos. It means an ordered system. Cosmos. Cosmos is the word that is most often translated by the word world in the New Testament. Cosmos, the orderly arrangement of things, from which we get cosmetics. from which we get cosmetology. We use cosmetics to bring order out of the chaos, right? Okay, that's exactly the idea of cosmos. It's the ordering of something. And when this word world is used that way in the New Testament, it means the ordered system that leaves God out. The ordered system that leaves God out. Now, clearly, Paul says, do not love the world. And then he says, do not be conformed to the world. He doesn't mean the beauty of this world. He doesn't mean a Florida sunrise. He doesn't mean the stupendous beauty of the Rocky Mountains. He doesn't mean the breathtaking beauty of the Grand Canyon. He doesn't mean the best of all possible earthly glories of getting on your knees and playing blocks with your grandchildren. He doesn't mean don't enjoy life. He said in another place, God has given us all things, what? Richly to enjoy. So it can't mean anything like that. Paul evidently knew Greek and Hebrew and Aramaic. He read the secular poets. He quoted them in his sermons and in his letters. He knew the culture of his day so well that he could debate the pagan philosophers on Mars Hill. He knew that God revealed himself in creation to every single person. I think Paul would have agreed with these famous lines by Malky Babcock. This is my Father's world. To my listening ears, all nature sings, and round me rings the music of the spheres. This is my Father's world. I rest me in the thought of rocks and trees, of skies and seas, his hands the wonders wrought. This is my Father's world. The birds their carols raise, the morning light, the lily white, declare their Maker's praise. This is my Father's world. He shines in all that's fair. In the rustling grass, I hear him pass. He speaks to me everywhere. I think Paul would find that an entirely biblical song to sing. So he's not talking about the physical planet. He's not talking about the beauties of the earth that God has made and given to us as a gift to be enjoyed. I said there are two words for world. What is the word cosmos, the organized system that leaves God out? That's the word that John uses in 1 John chapter 2. Love not the world. Cosmos is the word that's used there. Cosmos is not the word that is used in Romans 12, 2. He uses a different word, ion, A-I-O-N. If cosmos refers to an ordered system, ion literally means age. Age, as in this age and the age to come. This age and the age to come. Biblically speaking, there are two great ages. I know you can divide them in different ways, but biblically, there is this age in which we live. There is an age which is not here yet, but is to come and is promised by God. That's the word that's used here. Paul is saying quite literally, do not be conformed to this present age. This present age. Why? Because this age is coming to an end soon. You heard Harry pray a moment ago. We all echo with him. Even so, come Lord Jesus. And I told you last night, as we stand at the grave of those we love who died in Christ, God's not finished yet, right? God is not finished yet. There's more to come. There's more that God is going to do. Here is the paradox. And here is the challenge of Romans 12, 2. We live in this present age. But this present age, with all of its sorrow, and all of its sadness, and all of its confusion, and all of its misleading, and all of its sudden death, and all of the tragedy that's attached to this present age. We live in this present age. But this present age, with all of its unbelief, and all of its doubt and all of its skepticism and all of its anti-God philosophy, this present age will not last forever. There's a better day coming. There's another age coming when Jesus Christ will return. He will reign on the earth. The dead in Christ shall rise, and we who are alive and remain shall be changed in a moment. We shall become like Jesus, for we shall see him as he is. Now watch this. Here is the great challenge of the Christian life. We live in this age, but we know there is another age to come. This is what Paul is saying. Here's my whole sermon right here. To be not conformed to this age means to live by the values of the age to come while we still live in this present age. We must live in this world. This world is not the final world. Let me say it another way. We must live in this world, but this world must not live in us. So do not be conformed to this world, this present world, this present age. Word conformed. It's a complex word. If you sort of transliterate it over, and if you transliterate it and make a few changes along the way, when you move from Greek over to English, it's the word that means scheme. It's the word scheming, schemata. It's a complex word. To conform to the world. Don't be conformed to the schemes and the traps of this world. Those emails you get from the Nigerian prince who tells you you've just won $10 million or been deposited in your bank account. And if you'll just send them your bank account information, they'll transfer over to you $10 million. Just send your numbers and maybe a couple thousand dollars to show good faith, and they'll send you $10 million into your bank account. And for some reason, you send them the numbers. They never send you the money. Something happens in the translation along the way. The word, don't be conformed, means to scheme, trap. It also means to fashion, like a fashion show. A.T. Robertson offers this version. Don't take the world as your fashion plate. Now, why does Paul say we are not to follow the fashion of this world? Which is less a reference to clothing. Though I told you last night, your body really matters to God. Therefore, since your body really matters to God, what you put on your body matters to God, right? So it's not that clothing isn't included. But Paul uses a word from the world of fashion, but he's not just talking about clothing. He's talking about a way of thinking. We are not to let our mind be shaped into the fashionable ways of thinking after the schemes of this age. What is wrong with that? This world is dying. It is dying. This age will end soon. Watch it now. Somebody says to me, okay, Pastor Ray, what is worldliness? What is worldliness? To me, it is not a list of do's and don'ts, though I have already said, I think the list often can be very helpful. The essence of worldliness is to live as if this age will last forever. True worldliness means to buy into the notion that this world is the only world there is or ever will be. It's like that beer commercial of a few years ago. You only go around in life once. Grab all the gusto you can. You know what? You know what? You know what's so tricky about that? That beer commercial is so popular. That happens to be, on one level, good advice. Life isn't a dress rehearsal. You don't get a second chance. You don't get a do-over. If you mess up your short time here on planet Earth, it's not like you're going to get to come back and get a second go-around. But underneath that commercial was the unstated premise. Since this life is the only life there is, Do whatever you want. Indulge yourself. Throw aside the restraints. So, a while back, Marlene and I were flying out west to Reno, Nevada, doing a Bible conference out there. And to get out there, we had to fly to Las Vegas and change planes. So we flew right in over the Strip. That's a dazzling sight. Luxor and the MGM Grand and the Circus and the Bellagio. Y'all seem to know a lot about these places. Huh? I just see them on TV, folks. And, you know, the Stratosphere, that big tower out there that with the restaurants, that's almost 1,000 feet above the desert floor there in Las Vegas. I mean, rain or shine, they call New York the city that never sleeps. Well, really, really, Las Vegas, 24 hours a day, right? 24/7, 365. The lights are flashing, the casinos are going, the music's playing. Las Vegas is an interesting place to visit. We had to change planes. So we get off the plane and go through the airport heading. What's the very first thing you see? Slot machines, right? They can't even wait to get you out of the airport. I mean, right there, you get off the plane. There's a whole bank of slot machines right in front of you. And you know what? This is a side note, just editorial side note. No. That's not where that's going, Harry. No. I mean, but if I was going to play the slot machine, which I didn't do, I wouldn't do it in the airport anyway. I mean, I don't even understand. I don't even get that, you know. But they're smart. I mean, there's a reason why they make money in Las Vegas. You know, if somebody said, why don't you bash the casino owners, I wouldn't bother doing that. There's none of them here this morning anyway, and that I know of. And number two, they're only providing a service millions of people obviously want to pay for, right? If nobody came out there, they'd go out of business tomorrow. So, yeah, and I'm looking at my fellow passengers, not Marlene. We just went to the next flight. But Marlene and I, we're heading up to Reno for the Bible conference. But you people getting off the plane, they're going to vacation in Las Vegas. They can't wait. They can't wait. They're putting money in the slot machines and trying to get lucky there. And you see all the signs there. Right, come here, have fun, and a lot of food. And, I mean, everything is, it's cheap food, and it's everything is soaked in alcohol and anything you can imagine. Why? Because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. You can eat more than you should, drink until you're drunk, gamble until you're broke. You can indulge your flesh in every way your mind can imagine. And evidently, business is good in Sin City because the plane was filled with people coming to have fun and maybe get lucky one way or another. And I've already said, those casinos couldn't stay in business. People didn't want what they offered. Las Vegas simply provides an extreme example of what this age is all about. It's the ultimate unvarnished appeal to live as if there were no tomorrow. Do you have it? Do you understand what I'm saying? Worldliness is not Las Vegas. Las Vegas is just a symptom. It's not the cause of the problem. Worldliness is living as if there were no tomorrow. It's living today as if tomorrow will never come. I want to leave you with one final thought and I'm done. Christians don't fit in, and we never will. We'd be better off if we stopped trying to fit in. We are fools if we make conformity the goal of our lives. I ran across an amazing quote from legendary shock rocker Alice Cooper. If you don't know who he is, don't worry about it. Though you may not have heard the news, Alice Cooper became a Christian some years ago. Here's the quote I found. Drinking beer is easy. Trashing your hotel room is easy. But being a Christian, that's a tough call. That's rebellion. Bingo! 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 That's exactly what the Apostle Paul is saying. Being a Christian, that's a tough call. That's real rebellion. He's right on all counts. It's a lot easier to get drunk and fool around than it is to follow Jesus Christ. You want to be a true rebel against the status quo. Become a disciple of Christ. Make Him the Lord of your life. You'll be going against the flow every single day. So brothers and sisters, if you think this world, this age will last forever, then live by the world's rules. But if you think there's a better world coming tomorrow, then live today in the light of tomorrow. Your friends probably won't understand you, and it won't always be easy, and you'll often feel squeezed. But at least, you won't wake up with a hangover that comes from getting drunk on the ways of the world. Some people get drunk on alcohol. Others get drunk on sexual pleasure. Some people get drunk on building an empire. Others get drunk on fame, money, power, ambition, revenge. You know what? That's okay as long as this age lasts forever. In fact, living like that makes sense if tomorrow never comes. Why not grab all the gusto, indulge your passions, and trample on others if you really think you're going to live forever and this present age will never end? Remember what worldliness is. It's living as if tomorrow will never come. In the end, everything of this age will fall. Do you understand that? Everything man builds comes to a sudden end. A friend sent me an email containing these words from a poem called Grace Elegy, written in a country churchyard in England. The boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, and all that beauty, all that wealth e'er gave, awaits alike the inevitable hour. Paths of glory lead but to the grave. According to 1 John 2:17, this world is passing away along with its desires. Indeed, the best and brightest of us one day die. All that we do on this earth is going to someday be forgotten. Somebody else gets our house. Somebody else drives our car. Somebody else takes our place in the workforce. Somebody else sits in our office. So consider these next two sentences carefully. Those who look to the world for meaning and approval, they will eventually be disappointed because the best things of this world must one day disappear. Those who look to the God who created this world will find safety and security that lasts forever. But if what I've just said is true, and it is, here's the inevitable conclusion. Christians don't fit in. Never have. Never will. We ought to stop trying to fit in to the ways of the world. Do you know the name David Wise? You probably do and don't realize you know it. At the just finished Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, David Wise from the U.S. won the gold medal for freestyle skiing in the halfpipe competition. He's 23, he's married, he has a 2-year-old, and he wants to be a pastor someday. There's a story about him on the NBC website. NBC reporter Skyler Wilder wrote, and I'm quoting now from her article, David Wise is at the top of his sport. He's always smiling among his friends and competitors. However, he's not like the rest of the field. He is mature. The profile piece goes on to say, at such a young age, Wise has the lifestyle of an adult. He wears a baby Bjorn baby carrier around the house. He attends church regularly. He says he can see himself becoming a pastor a little way down the road. He's a youth leader at the Valley View Christian Fellowship in Reno, Nevada. Here's the kicker. Watch this. It's a wonderful young man. It's a wonderful story. And he won the gold medal. And here is the headline that NBC put over this article. Quote, David Wise's alternative lifestyle leads to Olympic gold. Did you get that? Alternative lifestyle. That used to mean something else. Now it's us. Now it's us. That's okay. At least they get the point. Following Jesus is the ultimate alternative lifestyle. We're not like the world. We never were. We never will be. Look, we cannot help the world if we're like the world. We can only change the world if we show the world a truly alternative lifestyle. Just like David Wise is doing. And that's what Paul meant when he said, do not be conformed to the world. This world is passing away. It's right at this point that the message of the gospel becomes so powerful. Jesus Christ came to bring God to us and us to God. He's the fullness of God in bodily form. He came to save us. He lives now to help us. So, my friends, ask the Lord of heaven to fill you with the fullness of who He is. And pray that He might break your addiction to the schemes of this dying age. Ask the Lord to help you live a truly alternative lifestyle. Sermons should be simple at the end. So simple now. I said all that but here at Word of Life, for a long time, we've been saying it in a simpler way. Only one life, it will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. This world is passing away. Don't be swept along with it. We don't fit in. We never have. We never will. That's okay. Keep swimming upstream with Jesus.
Thanks for joining us today. This podcast is made possible through the support of listeners like you. Come see us on the internet at www.keepbelieving.com. We'd love to hear from you this week. Join us for the next podcast from Keep Believing Ministries.